Today's special guest on the Social Graces program is Joe Donahue from WAMC Northeast Public Radio. I'm so happy for him to be on this program, and I'm a little bit nervous, but thank you, Joe, for being on the program, and welcome.
It's a delight. Thank you very much for the kind invitation. I appreciate it.
I think that you are such a dynamic factor in the success of WAMC. When did you join WAMC?
I have been here since 1994, so doing very bad math is 17, almost 18 years.
Wow. Was this your first radio program? Did you have previous experience in radio?
Yes. I actually, just a little baseline knowledge in that I have wanted to do what I'm doing since I was 4 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
There was never a point consciously in my life where I haven't wanted to do this. So my standard joke is I'm either incredibly focused or horribly narrow-minded, and I don't really know which. But when I was 4 years old, I had decided this is what I wanted to do. When I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, I used to play radio with my friends. We would have a tape recorder and we would record radio shows. When I was 12, 13, 14 years old, I got a gig with a local AM radio station outside of Philadelphia where I was doing commercials for them.
At what age?
11.
Oh, my gosh.
10 or 11. And then I worked at our high school cable television was just coming in, and our high school had a cable access channel, and this is when there were only like 30 channels on cable, not 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a cable access channel, and some people actually watched it, and I had a show on that for 2 years. And then I graduated from high school. I moved from outside of Philadelphia to the North Country, up to the Albany region, where my mother had grown up, and my mother and father retired here. And I came with them. I went to school at the College of St. Rose, and I started immediately working in commercial radio while going to school. And I worked for one station for almost 7 years before coming to WAMC. So I've been employed in radio for 30 years of my life, I guess.
What do you think? I had two questions to ask you, and you've already answered those. Was your desire growing up to be in radio, which, yes, you started at 4 years old, and please give us the details of your career in radio. Did you attend broadcasting school, or did you just work your way through with all of your, amateur experience and then professional experience?
I guess, the answer is yes.
Okay.
Both, sort of, because what I did was I always knew that I wanted to go to school and I had to go to school. My parents were very insistent on the fact that I was going to go to college, and I didn't fight with them on that. But there was a point where I was working and sort of had my dream job while I was going to college, and that was, and this goes back even into the high school years when I was doing a show, I was involved in a broadcast program in high school, so they were teaching me and I was learning while I was on the air. So that was certainly an education.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing with college. I had a wonderful, wonderful situation at the College of St. Rose when I went there, because I went in and I said, look, I have a job, and this is what I want to do when I get out of here. And they as a department, as a communications department, a group of professors came together and said, okay, this is what we can do, and they assisted me every step of the way. And so it was a wonderful experience, because I was able to really take what I learned in the classroom during the night,
mm-hmm.
and apply it when I was working as a as a news reporter, a news director, and as a radio sidekick during the morning.
Could you tell me how long WAMC Northeast Public Radio has been in existence?
It has been in existence for more than, I want to say, nearly 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
The WAMC, AMC stands for Albany Medical College. It started originally as the Albany Medical College radio station.
I did not know that.
And that is what AMC stands for. And this program, and there are people who call up during our fund drives and tell us that they used to listen to old WAMC when they would broadcast operations on the radio. And so that was very much a part of the station's history, and then the station ran into some trouble, and this is a story that Alan Chartok, of course, tells beautifully during our fund drives each and every time about the creation of the station, of how it was in trouble, and they came in, and this was the beginning of National Public Radio, was just starting in the early 70s, and how the station became, was saved, and over the years has become the seven-state powerhouse that it is.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that when it was the Albany Medical Center station, that they would go, like, step by step doing an operation and giving...
Yeah, it was done for students. We have great wishes that we had tapes of those old programs.
Mm-hmm.
People have told us about them in great detail, but unfortunately I've never heard any of them. I would love to.
There has to be cassettes or something.
I would hope.
Somewhere around the place. You know, it's hard to believe that you do a live, 3-hour, 5-day-a-week host of the round table. That's mind-boggling to me. How do you determine what the content will be for each 3-hour program? Is that all you're doing? Do you determine who's going to be on the show and the interviews and the content?
Mm-hmm. I have a wonderful producer, Sarah LaDuke, who mm-hmm. is our primary producer. That is her job, to produce our program. Like everyone at WAMC, myself included, we have many, many jobs and many hats. But that is her primary one, as mine is being the host and other producer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a two-man operation. And we work very closely together in coming up with the content for the program. I think it's safe to say that anything that makes the air that I have okayed and anything that makes the air she has okayed. And there's a bit of a checks and balances there. And I look for the things that I like. She'll look for things that she thinks are interesting and important on the program. And we have a huge schedule that we have on our computers. And months in advance, we're filling in blocks and figuring out where we're going to put things. And it's a big puzzle. The thing about the show is that we look at it, and this is sort of an unkind way of looking at it, because I love the show, and it's I think of it as a beautiful object. However, it is a machine. It's a content eating machine. And when you get done with 3 hours of it, you realize that tomorrow you have another 3 hours of it.
That's what's just amazing to me. Because I was listening this morning, as I usually do, to the roundtable, and we're going to get to your book show program in a minute, but you had 5 authors, interviews with 5 authors of 5 books that you had read, and I don't see how you do that.
Well,
frankly,
I don't know other than you just do it, and it does seem like a daunting task, and it is daunting. I talked about it on the radio this morning, that it's. I worked on just the script aspect. This doesn't even include the reading, but just the script aspect and the preparation for the show for almost 4.5 hours last night. And that is unusual. It's not usually that long as far as the script. It was especially heavy today because a lot of the show the entire show was live. That's rare. Usually there are some taped elements within the program.
Okay.
And that's out of, you have to do that some days because guests aren't available at the times that you're on because of time zones mm-hmm. and everything else. And sometimes it's nice just to have that break during that show so you can kind of physically and mentally prepare for the next thing while something else is played that you taped a day or two ago. Today I had, there were five books, and I say I'd read them over a week and a half, and I make notes, and I have an idea of what I'm going to do, and then the night before, I go through those, and while I'm writing the script, remind myself of the book and refamiliarize myself with the subject, and in my mind put together kind of a beginning and a middle of an end to an interview of what I want to do. I don't write questions. I do make notes, but I like the conversation to take me in the area. I have things in my mind that I want to cover,
mm-hmm.
but I don't. I want that to come from the recollection of reading the book and from my own curiosity as opposed to being a slave to a sheet of paper in front of me, which I did for many years. And it was just a feeling that I was becoming overly reliant on that and that I was missing key elements that I got away from that.
Yes. What I wanted to ask you about was you were now... you're now the book show. I'm sorry, but I can't remember the lady that was doing the book show. And now
Gretchen Holbrook-Rosina.
Yeah, and now it's your show.
Yes.
So this is an odd question, I'm sure, but why were there five books on the round table today when you have your book show?
Well, it's an odd question at all. It's a very good question. There's two answers to it. One is that the book show is a completely separate entity. The book show is a program that has been around long before I ever came to WAMC. It was started by the great Professor Tom Smith from the State University at Albany, was originally who was working with William Kennedy and starting the Writers Institute at the State University. And so the show has a long history, and Gretchen did it for a number of years, and she had an opportunity to move on and go to England and to teach, and she took that opportunity, and it was a program that I love and wanted to do. I love books,
mm-hmm.
and that's why books are such an important and essential part of the roundtable. I am the son of a librarian. I worked at a bookstore. I have a great love in reading and of books. It's not the sole ingredient to the roundtable. I try to make sure that it is not, but it is very much an important ingredient. And I look at the schedule and I think, oh, it's awfully book heavy today. But sometimes that can't be avoided because of schedules.
Mm-hmm.
But they are two separate entities. The roundtable is a 10 or 15-minute conversation. It is much more casual, and it's mostly about a topic. Today we talked about, we had a book called Cain's Legacy, and we interviewed a woman on the roundtable by the name of Jean Safer, and she was talking about sibling relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the book is about, but we were talking about, whether you've read the book or not, it didn't matter because we were talking about sibling relationships and how to get along and relationships that are worth saving and relationships that really perhaps you should cut bait on. And the book show is exactly what it says it is. It's a show about the book. We try to talk about the story. We try to talk about writing. We try to talk about the language. We try to talk about the construction. And there is a different... there is a bit of a different pace to it. And so, yes, they have a commonality that we talk about books, but I look at them as very different. There are subjects and mostly fiction, by the way, on the book show. It's mostly literary fiction. Not exclusively, but mostly. And it is a... you for pleasure instead of that very fast-paced reading that you have to do to get ready for a daily show. And then I can sit down and talk with the author about it for a half hour. That show, the book show, is also nationally syndicated and goes into some 200 stations across the country.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, congratulations. So
well, thank you.
That's wonderful.
And that was set up, obviously, long before I got involved. But it's several of our programs are nationally syndicated, whether the best of our knowledge, 51%, the Capital Connection, the Media Project. So these are programs that go out nationally, and the book show is one of them. So if you are in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you're hearing the show, then it has no relation to the roundtable.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you had mentioned that your mom was a librarian.
Yeah.
I'm sure you attribute your love of books because of her being a librarian?
Absolutely.
She had the whole family reading, probably.
Well, she did. I'm the youngest of five, and there was a very big difference between our ages. But I remember as a toddler, my mother was a librarian in Washington, D.C., a bookmobile librarian.
Hmm.
And she would get in the bookmobile and go from town to town and would bring me with her.
Oh,
and
how fun.
I vividly remember being in the bookmobile as we traveled from one place to the other, and I would kind of play behind the desk and read board books and that kind of thing, and she would do her duties as a librarian and then get back into the driver's seat. And
She actually drove the bookmobile.
Yes, she did.
That is amazing.
And
what an interesting story.
She was a traditional librarian, well, in the sense that she was a reference librarian and worked at other libraries. That was one of her posts. But it was, I always remember that. But she was a wonderful influence in that regard me being 3 or 4 years old and getting my library card was as big a deal as going and getting my license or registering to vote.
Yes. I know that you're excellent at interviewing people, and I was hoping that maybe you could talk to us a little bit about some of your favorite people that you have interviewed in your radio career.
It's difficult. I chuckle sometimes because I'm really bad at looking at things as a whole, at looking at my career as a whole of who I've interviewed, because sometimes I just forget. One of the downsides of doing so many interviews in a day and kind of cramming for the exam and then moving on to the next thing is you sort of forget. So every once in a while, sometimes somebody will pass away and I will say to Sarah, my producer, or my wife, I'll say, did I interview them? And they'll remind me and say yes or no, or you better go look it up. And so there are times where I forget. So in answering your question, which is a very valid one, I think of the ones that I still remember vividly.
There you go.
And that's my way of kind of answering the question, of things that I just remember that are very special. We have people on the show regularly who I love, who I just think are great on the radio. I have a wonderful rapport with. I think they're very honest. I love Roseanne Cash. Roseanne Cash has been on the show more times than I can count. Anytime she's in the area, I invite her on the program. I love her. She is a wonderful, wonderful guest on the program. I had Ashley Judd on the show not too long ago. She had a book about some of the humanitarian work that she had done. And by the end of the interview, I had goosebumps. I was just so impressed by her and by the work that she has done. So those are people that I think of. I've had wonderful experiences. I've gotten to interview the Dalai Lama. That's something that you'll never forget. I mean, he hugged me. That's amazing.
It's huge.
I've gotten to interview pretty much every childhood hero I've ever had, people that I've had great affection for, who molded who I am as an interviewer and who I am as a broadcaster. I've had the opportunity to interview, with a few exceptions, who people who passed before I was ever able to interview them. But those, I've gotten to interview all of those people, whether it be Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers.
You
or,
did not. Did you really interview Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Rogers, I will tell you a story about Mr. Rogers. Fred Rogers was my mentor. Fred Rogers was really the person who I think first took an interest. I first interviewed him when I was a high school student. And I told him, he was based in Pittsburgh, I was based in Philadelphia, and I wrote him a letter, and because I was doing the show on cable television, this children's show, and I wrote him a letter, and I told him, you know, this is what I'm doing, and I sent a tape, and he wrote me just the loveliest note back, and telling me about how important this was, and of talking to children as children, and reading to them, and that's basically what we were doing on the program, and that it wasn't silly, it wasn't, you know, flippant, it was respectful, and he was so lovely, and he asked me to keep in touch and to let me know where I went in my career. And when I did move, and I had an interviewing class, and I thought, you know, it'd be fun to kind of catch up with Mr. Rogers again. And he remembered me and remembered everything about our conversation. It had been maybe 2 years had passed. And he, and once again, we did the interview for the class. I sent him the project, and I would get notes from him, you know, every maybe 2-3 times a year, of just checking in, wondering how things were going.
And, what a nice guy.
And as time went on and the Internet became a part of our society and he could listen, he would shoot me a note and was on the program, and in fact was on just shortly before he passed. He was, I think, really somebody who I greatly enjoyed, and I thought was his curiosity in his interviewing segments. I think he's often made fun of and kind of parodied, but he was a real pro and a professional, and you don't last that long in the world of broadcasting if there isn't something incredibly special about what it is that you do. And he was unparalleled as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I know that you've won some awards pertaining to your interviews. Would you like to enlighten us on that?
We've won awards. You know, I don't...
Come on, it's okay.
This is an interesting thing. I can give you... it's hard to, you know, say, well, I won this, I won that, and this is why...
I know it's difficult, but give it a shot.
But one of the things that's interesting about it, and I will tell you, I will make this a social statement instead of a self-congratulatory one. But
okay.
We've been lucky enough to win awards from Edward R. Murrow, from the National Press Club, from the Scripps Howard Award, the Headliner Awards. We as a show and me individually, have won awards, and that's very nice. It's very nice. I will say, one of the things that has really changed is that winning awards now, and it's not why we do it, and it's not the reason that we go on the air every morning. But we've kind of given up because it's a much different playing field than it was 10, 15 years ago. The radio stations aren't out there anymore. The programs aren't out there anymore. There are so many media entities that have been just gobbled up that those award programs have gone by the wayside. And there are a few. There certainly are a few. And we pick up one here and there, and that's very nice. But we find ourselves where, because of a commercial, because so much of what commercial radio is, and I'm not saying it's bad, it's just different than what we do, we'll get a packet from an organization that has an award submission, and they'll say, send us a 5-minute snippet. And I don't know that it's fair to take an interview that we've done for a half hour with somebody like Arthur Miller or Kurt Vonnegut or John Updike,
mm-hmm.
and to put 5 minutes into it and think that that's going to give an idea of what it is that we've accomplished in that time,
mm-hmm.
and we've done it, and sometimes we win and sometimes we don't, and I look at it and I say, you know, I don't I don't really worry about it as much as I used to. I used to worry about it a lot, not worry about it, but I used to be, you know, very interested in putting the stuff out there and say, oh, you know, I'd love for this to win an award. I'd love for this to be noticed. I'd love for this to be given some a pat on the back. But I think what happened is that the industry changed, and we're you know, kind of that dinosaur that does something that really nobody else does, and we're the square peg going into the round hole, and I don't mean us. I just mean public radio in general. And so some of those we've just kind of backed off on a little bit. And it's always nice to be awarded something and given have people say nice things about what you do.
Well,
that is very pleasant. But it is, I think, also a sign of the times that there's less of that now than there used to be.
I think you're a very humble person. I wanted to ask you about, I think you interviewed Stephen King at some point.
Yeah.
How was that interview?
Well, it was, I've done it a few times, and I've always enjoyed it, and I think I think the reason you ask me that question is because people think of him as being this, you know, the gold standard of a popular fiction writer. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's a huge name. Everybody knows the name Stephen King, whether you like the books or not. And it's such a brand, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and that it's larger than life. And I think that, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I think that the reason, because people ask me about that particular interview a lot, and I think the reason is because he's so universal and worldwide.
Yes.
And what I found is that he is incredibly down to earth. He is, he does not like fame. He does, I don't say that I think his relationship with his readers is one of respect, but the silliness of it, of the